Lipcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Welcome to the sixth installment of Lipcast Slovakia. I'm Julia Sherwood, a literary translator based in London. And my guest today, Jonathan Gresty, is based in Prešov. Jonathan studied English language and literature at University of Durham and creative writing in Manchester, and he holds a PhD from the University of Prešov, where he now teaches English and translates from Slovak. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello.
Welcome to Lipcast Slovakia.
Hello, Julia.
Hi. So how are you, and how have you got through these strange pandemic-stricken times? Slovakia has fared better than the UK, but still, I guess it has affected your daily life and plans.
I've quite enjoyed it, actually. I mean, it's been very quiet. I've welcomed the fact that there's a lot less traffic on the roads. I've listened to the birds for the first time in many years. It's felt a bit like Slovakia felt when I first came out here in the 1990s. Kind of quiet, lots of people walking around, not many cars. So I've enjoyed it.
That's nice to hear. So most people have concentrated on the negative sides, but so you've come in the 1990s, and since then you did your PhD on translation of Slovak tourism texts into English. Now, everyone who's visited Slovakia has probably noticed that the quality of English language information for tourists leaves something to be desired. Why do you think that is? And can you give some examples of the typical problems you found? And can you say a little bit about the Skopos theory that you used in your research?
Skopos theory is an interesting approach towards translation. And basically, it gives the translator more latitude to adapt the source text to meet the needs of the target audience. So, for example, with tourist texts, it's especially relevant. You select information from the source text which you think is interesting for the target audience. You don't just translate everything willy-nilly. You think about your audience more. You adapt the language. You adapt the information. So, for example, I was translating a text about Liptovský Mikuláš, and it mentioned all these historical figures like Hoxha and Štúr and various other people, some of whom not even Slovaks had heard of. And I thought, well, there's no point translating all these names, or you know, including all these names. So I would just kind of edit out certain things and then add certain things. So there's a reference to Janošik, and I added information about him being a sort of famous outlaw, often referred to as the Slovak one Robin Hood, things like this, just to make the text more accessible to the target audience. And this is what the Skopos theory allows.
Well, this is interesting because I didn't actually know about this theory, but I have been doing this kind of naturally, especially with non-literary texts, because I have noticed that exactly what you mentioned. Sometimes there's a lot of information that will be absolutely meaningless to the English reader, and vice versa. There's things that need to be explained a little bit more. So, So I have actually used Skopos theory. That's good to know.
I think we do. I think a lot of us do that kind of intuitively, but I think the problem is with translation, some translators never do it because they're afraid, and they're afraid that the customer might call them up, you know, why have you left this out, or why have you added this? So, you know, I think translators need to be reminded, especially with operative texts, which are written to have a positive effect on the reader, to persuade them to visit somewhere, to buy something, or to vote for a political party or whatever. Such texts as these require the Skopos theory, I think the Skopos approach.
Yes, but as you said, sometimes you actually need to convince the person who commissioned the translation because they believe it's incorrect, then if you leave things out or add things.
You might have to explain it to them,
Yes. And now, so these crimes against the English language that you discovered, were they the reason why you decided to take up translating yourself, or is that something that you started doing earlier?
Well, I first came to Slovakia in 1992, and I was in Spiska Nova Ves, and I think within about a year of living in Slovakia, people were coming up to me asking if I'd translate things for them into English from Slovak, and it just kind of happened, and I started doing it. I've never really looked for translation work, but people just came up to me. And then I moved to Banska Bystrica, and it just went from there. And then after I've been here for so long, people kind of got to know about me. And it's a small country. There aren't that many native speakers living here. Certainly not many have stayed for as long as I have. So, you know, your name gets around. But it was, I've always taught full time. I've always been a full time teacher. Translation has always been a bit of a sideline.
But having been away from the UK for such a long time, how do you make sure that you keep track of the changes in English and that, you know, your own English isn't contaminated by Slovak?
It's a good question. I try to be aware of that. I talk to my students a lot about language interference. It's one of the things I'm particularly interested in. I'm just very aware of the words that I use, and I try to be careful all the time when I'm translating and asking myself, is this really an English expression, or is this just me kind of speaking Slav English? But I'm very aware of it, and I don't know how to answer that question. I read a lot, obviously, in English. I still have a lot of native speaker friends out here. I spend a lot of time with my wife, and I speak English most of the time. So I don't think it's too much of a danger, me speaking Slovak English. I hope not. Do tell me if anything I say sounds very Slovak.
Well, no, I haven't come across any such thing in either your written translation that I've read or talking to you. And so that actually brings me to your translation of Anton Balázs's novel Tábor padlých žien, The Camp of Fallen Women, which appeared in 2016 in Ljubljana in Slovenia. So can you tell me how that happened and what the book is about?
Yeah, I was approached by an organisation called the Forum of Slavic Cultures, based in Ljubljana in Slovenia. And they received, I think, funding from Russia, believe it or not, to sponsor this or to fund this translation of what originally was intended as 100 Slavic novels from 10 or 12 different countries. And they approached me to translate this one, Tábor padlých žien, into English, and it took me about a year and a half. One of the reasons I took it on was they said, you know, we don't need it by next week or by the end of the month. You know, you've got a year and a half to do this. And so I thought, you know, that sounds quite manageable. It sounds quite challenging. So I agreed to do it. And I worked on it. And it's an interesting novel because I think it's interesting in two ways. Just to introduce it briefly, it's set in the 1947-48, after the communist coup, and it describes the arrest of these prostitutes in Bratislava, in Vidirica, and then being interned in a labour camp near to Novaki, one which really existed, where there were lots of other groups of sort of asocial types, you know, according to the communists. There was a Roma community, there was a partisan community, there were priests and various other sort of misfits under the new regime. And it kind of describes life there and various incidents which went on. It's a kind of satire on communism. It's a very boisterous novel. It's quite pornographic in parts. There's a lot of sex in it. There's a lot of dialogue in it, lots of sort of vulgarity, but it's quite nice. I mean, it's quite interesting and lively, and it was fun to translate, so it gave me a lot of insight into different aspects of the early communist regime. It's a bit sprawling and chaotic, the novel. I think there are lots of sort of plots and subplots which he starts and doesn't really resolve very well. But I also think it's very interesting from the historical point of view, in that it was written very soon after the Velvet Revolution. So it kind of gives you an insight into the atmosphere in Slovakia then. So suddenly authors have the opportunity to write all this kind of satire about the communist regime, which of course had been strictly forbidden just a year or two before. The sort of explicit erotic scenes are things which he probably wouldn't have been able to get away with a few months or years before he wrote this book. So it's this kind of, a little bit like Rivers of Babylon. It's this kind of, the Pandora's box has been opened, and so the genie, the lamp, you know, the bottle has been opened, and suddenly he can kind of say what he wants, write what he wants, and you feel that kind of euphoria coming through. But it's a bit of a chaotic novel. I mean, I don't know if I would recommend it as sort of a masterpiece of Slovak literature, but it's fun, and people who are interested in that era should read it, certainly.
The book that you translated more recently, Jana Bodnárová's novel Náhrdelník obojok, is a very different kind of book, although it's also based on the dark chapter of 20th century history in Slovakia. So what was it like working on this book, and can you introduce it briefly?
Yeah, this was a very different book. It's much more poetic. It's much more kind of quiet. It's introspective, sort of sensitive, introverted, I think, as a novel. It's kind of this lots of dialogues between these two women characters. They're just, it's really just two women who are friends, different generations, but they are kind of connected by family as well, and it traces their lives from before the Second World War right up to when the novel was written in about 7 or 8 years ago. And it's kind of written in the form of different fragments, and the kind of flashbacks and then leaps forward in time. It's a bit like a kind of jigsaw puzzle. It all kind of comes together at the end. But it's very interesting. It's set in Liptovský Mikuláš, even though she doesn't state that it's Liptovský Mikuláš, but it is very much based on that town where she herself grew up. And there's a lot of colour in it. There's a lot of local colour. You feel the atmosphere, the Jewish community from between the wars is described quite nicely, quite evocatively. Communism is dealt with. The 1960 events of 68 are touched upon. But it's all very kind of artistic and poetic. It's not nearly as explicit or satirical as The Camp of Fallen Women. It's a very different book. But I enjoyed doing that because Jana's a kind of friend of mine, so I was able to talk to her while I was translating and discuss things with him. I didn't really know Anton Balázs until after I'd translated the novel. I did meet him and liked him. He's more of a journalist. Balázs is more of a journalist, whereas Jana is more of a poet, and so it's a very different experience. It looks like next year it will be published in the UK.
Yes, I was just going to say, UK, well, in India, actually, it's Seagull Books is the publisher. So let's hope that it all works out according to plan. Yeah. So over the past few years, you've translated excerpts from literary works by a huge range of Slovak authors for the Slovak Literary Review and books from Slovakia. Did you come across any books that you think might be of interest to Anglophone readers and that you would like to translate yourself or that you think should be translated into English?
That's a very good question, because the problem there is knowing on the basis just of 2 or 3 pages how good the whole novel is. So that makes it very difficult for me to judge, because they've obviously chosen these short extracts which will catch the attention of the reader. But to then draw, you know, sort of form a conclusion about the whole novel just on that is tricky. But I personally like novels, Slovak novels, which give me some insight into how life used to be here and, you know, open my eyes about certain events which took place here, which we don't know very much about. And one novel which caught my attention was called Nezabudnite na labuče, or Don't Forget the Swans, by a pressure writer called Petr Juščák. And this tells the remarkable story of this young woman in Poprad who was arrested by the Soviets during the Second World War after the Red Army came through. They found a painting of, or a photograph of Hitler in her attic. And on the basis of that, she was arrested. Also, she'd had a relationship with a German soldier. And she was arrested and transported to a gulag in the very easternmost part of Siberia, where she then gave birth to a child in this labor camp. They were then freed from the labor camp in the 50s after Stalin's death and came back to Slovakia. But this boy kind of grew up not knowing who his father was. And only after his mother died did he find out the whole story. And then he started looking into, you know, who his father was. And he then managed to find out. And this is all a true story, which Juščák has researched in great detail. And he tells the story of it in this novel, Don't Forget the Swans. And I think it's a fascinating story. It's an extraordinary story. However, and this is where I go back to Skopos, I'm going to say something now which some people might object to. I think that novel, a bit like The Camp of Fallen Women, would really benefit from some serious editing. And so I would suggest it would be good for publication in English, because it's such a fascinating story, but with some degree of transcreation. So dare I say it, someone like me or someone else who would take on the task of editing this, editing out certain things which aren't really very interesting, reducing it perhaps in length, and telling this story for an Anglophonic audience. So yes, I think that would be good, but with this kind of caveat.
You have now spent about half of your life in Slovakia and have acquired a Slovak family. And you said in an interview that you've gone native and that sometimes you have trouble remembering your own Britishness. So do you feel more Slovak now than English or British? Or how would you define your identity?
I was talking to my wife about this yesterday and she said to me, you're definitely not Slovak. So I can't make that claim, but I do feel kind of comfortable here. I feel kind of comfortably disconnected both from Britain and Slovakia kind of culturally, to the extent that I don't really identify closely with either. I'm just happy being who I am here. How can I put it? When I see British people, tourists in Prussia or in Slovakia, I don't really feel any desperate need to talk to them. When I meet the expat community here in Slovakia, I don't necessarily feel I've got more in common with them than I do with Slovaks. So to that extent, I don't feel particularly British. But my wife says, you know, my DNA is British, my gestures are British, my ideas, my cultural interests are very British. So I can't disclaim any connection with my mother country. But I don't know, I feel I'm happy living here. I've never felt any wish to go back to Britain to live.
It's interesting. I think I feel very similar as a Slovak-born person living in the UK. I don't think I will ever be British, but I can't really imagine myself living in Slovakia again, although I go there very often and I love going there and I still have probably more friends there than anywhere else. But yes, it's a kind of interesting state in between, which can be very enriching, I think, if you're in a good place. If you're kind of feeling down, it can feel strange not to belong anywhere, but I think one can learn to live with it.
I get homesick for Slovakia when I come to Britain, so I guess I'm in the right place here.
So apart from teaching English, you've run a radio show, you've written lyrics for a Slovak rock singer, and if I may give away your secret, you've recently completed your own first novel. Does mm-hmm. that novel reflect some of your experience of living in Slovakia? And what language did you write it in?
I wrote it in English. Yeah, it does. I wouldn't say it's autobiographical, but certainly I've drawn heavily from things that I've experienced and seen in this country. And it's been translated into Slovak. And next year, all going well, it should come out. IKAR, I've signed a contract now with IKAR. So they said they would publish it next year. They were going to publish it this year, but because of the pandemic, they've put it off until next year. So I'm earnestly hoping there won't be a second wave or anything else to stop it happening. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it coming out.
Well, so do I. I look forward to reading it, and I will keep my fingers crossed for the publication not to be delayed.
Thank you.
The same for Jana Bodnárová's book to come out next year. It's been really great talking to you. Thank you very much, and take care.
Thank you to you as well, Julie. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.